Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
In your tweet, you say that you want to meet a guy older than 35 who loves Jesus, his mama, and bottoming, who has a flexible career, maybe a writer, that lets him travel, can also afford to take me on a vacation once a year, and I'll take us on two others. Bonus if you pack my suitcases and with a love note on it.
Hello, name it and claim it.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, a podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? This is the season finale with Danny Franzese from Mean Girls, from Looking on HBO, from Drag Race, and God, what a way to go. I'm so grateful you're here. I'm so grateful that we've gotten this far. This is the 86th fucking episode, and how dare we take up this gay ass space in this straight ass world, if we're being honest. Danny is such a good guest to end the second year with. We talk about some behind the scenes Drag Race stuff, and he gives some really honest answers about growing up gay and coming to terms with his fabulosity. And I don't want to say much before the episode except thank you. Like, I mean that from my gay ass heart. Thank you for listening, for sharing, for buying the silliest merch ever, for sending me nice messages, and just for being here. There are so many people who have listened since episode one, and I just feel lucky. And if you've joined us in the past year, I'm thrilled to have you. And just know this is the beginning, baby.
Baby.
And I'll give one final plea. If you have not yet left a 5-star review and you listen on Apple Podcasts, I'm trying to get to 200 reviews there, and it means the world and makes a big annoying fucking difference. So click the 5 stars and leave a note if you haven't yet. And that is just a huge, huge Hanukkah gift to me. We're going to get into this episode with Danny Franzese. Follow him. Get your tickets to his gorgeous show if you're in South Florida. And get some character actress sweatshirts for your loved ones, gay or straight, allied, for the holidays at gayasspodcast.com. I'm at Eric Wills. I love you so fucking much. And enjoy. I don't know where to begin, Vibes. Daniel Franzese is on That's a Gay Ass Podcast, and we're recording before 10 a.m. Is the Pulitzer on its way to you? It should be. You are an icon. You are a legend. You are the moment, and you are looking stunning this early. Thank you for coming on That's a Gay Ass Podcast, Daniel.
Thank you. This is just an avatar. I'm actually still sleeping.
Is this fully Meta is doing virtual reality and I'm actually talking to the robot version of you? If you were given the option to have sex with an avatar, a virtual person, would you take the opportunity?
Yeah, sure.
Would you top or bottom?
In the virtual realm?
Yeah. Are you getting topped by the robot or are you penetrating them?
I'm probably penetrating the robot because I feel... I don't know. It'd be amazing. I think it would be like one of those, like, what do they call them? You know what I'm talking about?
Like the headset things?
No, the things, the flashlight.
I love like you. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah, no, I definitely now I can see. You're right. You're right. A robotic. What if it was like a ghost flashlight? They think traveling to Mars is the most important thing, but I would say that it's fucking a phantom.
Uranus. Clearly.
It's traveling to Uranus. We were talking before we started recording that you had to move all of your 1,500 podcasts today because you're going to an Elton John finale concert tonight. I want to congratulate you. This is huge. How are you feeling going into it?
Well, I'm nervous and excited. And I mean, I'm actually cool. I never thought I'd see him in concert. I'm not really like a concert person.
Same.
But I always get invited to things and I never regret it. And I feel like Elton John has got so many bangers that like I'm going to be fine. Like I'm going to be like...
You're going to be good.
In a way I didn't know, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I went to Dolly Parton. This is like before, a long time ago. Someone's like, do you want to go to Dolly Parton? And I was like, sure. Like it did, I was like, I like her, you know? And then I went and I was bawling. Now I love Dolly Parton. Now I stan forever and ever.
Wow, you were changed for good.
But I was changed for good.
I do think that there's a certain list of concerts that, if invited, it is against gay law to say no. For example, Dolly Parton. For example, Elton John. For example, when Whitney Houston was alive, you would have to go.
Yeah,
when, who else? I mean, Cher is on that list. Celine Dion is on that list. I recently saw Lizzo in concert, and that was, I was a bit bamboozled into it, if I'm being honest with you. My husband, we were celebrating our wedding anniversary, and he said he got me a gift. And keep in mind, I'm just like you, and I'm not a concert person. He goes, I got you a gift. A few weeks ago, I bought you expensive tickets for us to see Lizzo. I said, hold the phone. You bought you a gift.
Mm-hmm. That's like a twisted.
Let's not get that twisted, honey. So then
I got you half a sandwich. No, you were hungry.
I mean, that's exactly what it was. It was the concert version of a half sandwich. So we ended up going to see Lizzo. And of course, I was jumping along with the 12-year-olds the white moms. I mean, it was so well rehearsed. It was such a good I've not seen many an arena tour. And I do think that I've been changed for good as well.
I was at Fenton Bailey, who's one of the owners of World of Wonder. Mm-hmm. I was at his like 50th birthday party. It was like a casino themed and everything else. And we got there and you played the casino games, but you won raffle tickets instead of money.
Mm.
And then all the raffle tickets went in there and it was for like Sixth Row Gaga Fame Monster Tour. Now, I wasn't even like, I mean, I was a Gaga fan. Like I said, like when it comes to music, like, you know, it took me to the Beyonce visual album to be on like the Bay Train.
Sure, sure, sure.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so I'm like a little like a late bloomer when it comes to that stuff. So Gaga, I liked her, but I wasn't like, oh my God, I wasn't like, rah, 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 you know? And so, but I was like, ooh, I should, you know, I was talking to a friend the day before, like, we should try to go to Gaga. Like, I want to see what that's all about, what the buzz is all about. Anyway, they do the raffle and they come out and most of our tickets are on the top, you know, because we were like late to the party. And then the woman falls and all the tickets fall on the floor. And I'm like, I'm like, that's good. I told my friend, I'm like, that's good for us. Like, that's a good moment. And then they really got mixed up. So it was everybody at the office there, everyone at World of Wonder, like all the interns, they've probably been buzzing for like a month over who's going to win these Gaga tickets. And then instead, and all, honestly, you're supposed to build up, like they gave away other things like a vodka and other things. And you're supposed to like build up to like the grand prize, but he was so drunk and happy that he just was like, Gaga tickets. And he pulled it out and I won.
And those fucking World of Wonder interns were
so. They were so mad at me.
They said, like, this fucking faggot.
The DJ went, really? Really, bitch? Like, just because, like, whatever, I'm an actor, I should be like, nah. I was like, really, bitch? I'm going to Gaga. Like,
he guest judges RuPaul once, and the people that put in a decade of work at World of Wonder said.
Everybody looked disappointed. Everyone looked disappointed. They all were, like, a little mad at me. I think they all wanted to, like, find out the story of how was it, and you got it. Oh, and it was so-and-so in accounting. But no, bitch, Danny came in, showed up.
And she was never seen again.
And I was like, rah, 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 rah. But they created a Gaga fan. They did what they wanted to do. I mean, that was an amazing concert, and I did not expect it.
I'm thrilled for you, and I'm devastated for the World of Wonder interns. I really feel, because they never saw you again. You said fame monster.
Their faces were like,
oh no.
They were so mad that like I got it. Like, as if, you know, whatever. Just because I was in a movie, I could afford 3 6-row Gaga tickets on a whim.
No, hon. I mean, also, here's the deal. I think people think that when you have one moment of success in any, especially in Hollywood, it means that you are, what, a billionaire for life. But yes, you are a star. But if anyone is offered 3 front row tickets to a Gaga concert,
I'm going to the concert. Like, you're crazy.
Well, speaking of World of Wonder, it's in my contract to ask you about not only when you honored your stunting mother on RuPaul's Secret Celebrity Drag Race. I was reading the articles about you wearing her earrings in the first performance. I mean, just a gay man and his mom. There's nothing like it. But before we get into that, I need to ask about when you judged on Drag Race and you were witnessing the Snatch Game in front of your eyes.
Snatch Game card.
Framed on the goddamn wall. I love that also. I was like, where are you calling it from? It says LA in giant letters behind you. So you witnessed Jackie Cox do Lisa Rinna. You witnessed Gigi Good as that blinking robot. Britta filtered to Jennifer Holliday. Heidi in Closet, Leslie Jones. Jada was Cardi B. Sherry Pie was in this season.
Oh?
Sorry, I forgot. We're not supposed to name. Is there anything from production that you take with you that people would be surprised to hear from filming?
Yeah, Snatch Game's like a full hour. Like, it was long. It was like maybe even longer than that. It was a full, like, they just wrote it till the wheels fell off and then they edited it out.
Like, riff, 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 riff.
Yeah. It was really long. Like, and there was other questions that didn't air, you know.
Sure. And then when you do you film all of when you're doing that, like obviously you watch Snatch Game and then you were also on the panel watching the runway. Do you is that all one day?
2 days. Yeah, you come in, you get glammed. They do the they bring you in. You don't know any of the queens by their real names.
Oh.
So that was a tricky part because I think I knew Britta. I had met Britta. I had met Jan and I knew Gigi, but I didn't really know them any of them really well. They weren't like friends or anything. But I was like, who's who?
Oh, shit.
You know, you wanted to like know who everybody was.
Yeah.
And you had them at their character.
Oh, that is a trip.
That was kind of fun. And, you know, and some of them were staying in character for the whole hour and some of them were like breaking and being themselves. And, you know, it was like, really trying to keep it going. Like, you know, they do stage directions like, okay, we're going to take a break, people. And some people would stay as their characters.
Stop it. Okay. Method bitches.
And then the next day you come in and you do your runway, which, by the way, I did a reveal.
Of course you did a reveal.
Into the same outfit. I ripped the vest off and had the same vest underneath, which I thought was so funny, but I don't think gets the national, international attention that it should as a moment.
And maybe they're going to air a reunion version of the show, and it's finally
one
Twitter.
Day,
if it's still around, well, it'll take hold.
One day, you know, me and Marco will get the credit for that funny idea. But yeah, I did that, and then they let us like spy on them. Like, we got to go behind the two-way mirror while they were putting their makeup on and getting ready.
Stop it, not the two-way mirror.
Which is so cool. They're like, I was like right in their face. They were like, you know, like putting makeup on.
Did they know that this was happening? This feels like
Jonathan Bennett. It was like, you're freaking out.
Yeah, this feels like a violation of HIPAA. Did they know that you were back there?
No, they're it's not a violation. They can do whatever we want because they're trapped and they're prisoners.
They're signed. They sign their goddamn lives away.
Yeah. And, you know, Jonathan Bennett is like literally like a puppy on 10 Red Bulls. So it's like, I'm trying to calm him down and I'm like having the time of my life at the same time. So I'm like, I can't calm him down.
He's banging on the glass.
He was like licking the glass. Like, yeah, like, crazy.
So when you and Jonathan are watching the runway, this is always my question when people judge on that show. So obviously that when all the judges are riffing on doing wordplay with what they are wearing, maybe I don't want to know how the sausage is made, but I kind of do. Are those lines fed to the judges? Are they all improv or is it a mixture of both?
So I'll give you some tea. You want tea?
I want tea, honey.
So the first thing is we're quiet and they walk out. And we hear their, I'm a, you know, whatever, like Trey didn't like the session. You know, like you hear like whatever they're saying as they walk the runway and we're writing our jokes.
Oh.
You know? And if you have one, you can just yell it out if it's like really like visceral. Yeah, yeah. But they'll probably have you repeat it anyway. And so you see all of the whatever it is, 12 girls, whatever at the time. And then they come out and go again. And this time you yell your stuff.
So they walk twice.
Yeah.
That is tea. And you are so wow. You're writing down the brilliance coming from the dome, from the head. And
yeah. But you know what else is really frustrating? Is that like it's Rue and then it's Carson or Ross. And then it's Michelle. And then it's the guests. So like
all
the good ones are taken. You're like struggling, you know? I'm like crossing shit out as we're like,
fuck.
Yeah, you know?
They got all the low hanging fruit. I mean, I'm sure I would panic Ayana, panic Catrice if I was in that scenario. But I have to say, your appearance and everything you do, I'm not just buttering your biscuit.
Butter that biscuit, babe.
Honey, the biscuit, I just took her out of the oven and I am now fistful of butter when I tell you that.
She's popping fresh.
Popping fresh, I put my palm on the biscuit. The butter is leaking over the sides. I put the biscuit to my mouth and I whisper, I love everything you are in. I think that you you have made me feel seen, Daniel Franzese, for most of my gay life, and this gay ass podcast is better off for you being on it. I mean, you not only are such a talented actor, comedian, your podcast Yes Jesus is giving gay people and religionas a place to shine. You not only sang Beautiful in Mean Girls at a time which I thought was not only funny but also I needed to hear it, and you are just dear friends with the other gay star of Mean Girls, who is now, you are also clashing back at Candace, what the fuck is that witch's name?
Oh god, yeah,
Candace Cameron Burr. I mean, Blur. You're everything I need and more, and so thank you for your cervix.
Cervix.
That being said, I do want to ask you the famous podcast question, which is, Daniel Franzese, you're on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
Oh, probably Bette Midler. It's her again.
Her again, that fucking bitch. I mean, was it one performance in particular? Is it the fact that she was singing next to Blowies in the bathhouse? How did we get
here? Here's the thing. I don't know why we like the same thing. Like, I don't know why all gays like the same things. It's really, like, wild to me. Like, how did I know to like Bette Midler and be drawn to her?
Yeah.
I didn't even know what sex was when I was a baby. And I was, like, on Ruthless People, like, reciting it and pouring my little fake martini like she does and throwing it behind my shoulder in the mirror every time I got dressed. I don't know how I knew. Okay. How did I know to listen to Right Said Fred, I'm Too Sexy, and listen to RuPaul? How did that stuff attract me? I don't understand.
It's a brilliant question, and I think that's partly why I am obsessed with doing this podcast, because almost every single answer that is given from all the almost like 80 episodes we've done is an answer that viscerally cuts to my gay core, my deep into my second hole. You saying Bette Midler is 100% one of the big reasons that made me gay. And then, to make a gorgeous full circle story, I got to see her play Dolly in Hello Dolly on Broadway, and a third hole was created.
I didn't get to see that.
Oh my god, the thing is, she just chews the scenery. I thought the question that you ask, why did we all know this? It remains to be seen. I mean, do you think about Bette is that she is just so, I don't know. I think she sees us.
Well, it's besides her. See, I told my mom. No, I texted her. I'm doing a podcast.
Don't call.
What would she do? Call.
Moms.
Moms. Besides her, you know what other bitch I blame?
Who?
Annie.
That fucker bitch, Annie.
Annie. She did it to me.
You're talking about the titular character of the Broadway musical Annie.
The Little Orphan Annie in the movie.
Wow.
I want to be a 9-year-old orphan girl.
I mean, there is a reason why Annie is a queer icon. It's probably because she's singing "The Sun Will Come Out Tomorrow," and all of us gay boys and girlies are praying, wishing, hoping.
It was the laundry choreography. I think that, like, when I think of Annie, I think of it's a hard life.
Well, fuck my drag. Hard Knock Life is a bop.
No one cares if your dreams and that get creepy. No one cares if you grow, if you shrink, like all that shit. I was in it.
I was hoping for a second you were going to improvise every lyric because you didn't remember a single one. No one cares if you're Tupper or your bottom. No one cares if you're Otter or a twink. Okay, I think we just wrote, actually.
Yeah, that's good. No one cares if you have a stupid red curly wig, as long as you can sing.
And you're making Broadway minimum a week. So then that begs the question of you embracing your queendom, queerdom, and slayness with Annie, with Bette Mid. When you did this little indie film, Mean Girls, it was 2004. You were not out at the time, or were you?
No. You know, this is really funny because I think about it all the time, like about, you know, my trajectory of coming out and everything. And my family was affirming of other gay relatives.
Okay.
I don't say celebrated, but I say that they were lovingly tolerated.
Okay.
Like, they were invited to weddings and were always on the same invite. You know, it was always like, oh, they're this, they're that. You know, we know what's going on, but we don't talk about it.
We weren't going to a pride parade and holding up a sign.
They weren't
going
to be, like, dancing together at the wedding, but they were sitting next to each other at the wedding kind of thing. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, yeah, I think affirming is the word.
Right. And so I didn't have, like, so much fear there. I didn't feel like I was going to get kicked out of my house or something like that. But, like, society didn't make sense. in school, I felt like the only gay in the village. Mm. Like, I didn't see anyone else that was like kind of gay. Mm-hmm. It was one gay student, and he was like graduating when I was like a sophomore, and he was kind of out. And I only found out he was gay like the last day he was at school. And like my heart was like beating. I just wanted to talk to him, you know? And he was gone before I could think, find out anything.
What was his reputation in school before he found out he was gay? Was he?
I don't know. I was a sophomore. He was a senior, you know? Oh. I don't really know. But I do know that I was in a talent show with him or something. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Because I was always in like drama. That's how I met him. And he had a boyfriend that was like way older. He's like, that's just my friend. And there was like
a. Stop it.
22-year-old there or something. I don't
remember. Stop it. I love how every story of a young gay person always yeah. deals with
other. And that guy was obviously gay too. I was like, because I was like in South Florida, and like South Florida gays had like frosted tips and
poop orange skin,
and like yeah, an orange skin. You knew who was who. And then like I went to musical theater school, where you think I could flourish and come out. But the year before I got there, there was a huge scandal where a dancer was shown around school by a gay guy, and then they ended up hooking up. And then the gay guy told everyone they hooked up, and then he graduated. So when the dancer came to school, everyone was like, "You're gay." And the guy was just like experimenting or something. And so he cried to me about it like the second week of school. Like, and I was like, "Man, I'm like, I got to be careful what I do here." You know what I mean? Like,
fuck. Even in a musical theater program.
Yeah. And then there was only one out kid, and he had like a pride flag as a canopy over his bed and was like, "I'm gay." Like, it was like really like,
Hold the fucking phone.
By the way, respect for him.
But you're telling me that
it was so intimidating.
You were at a musical theater program. No one was out. Was this West Point? Where were you?
Florida still.
Oh, see, my that's God.
The climate of like, you know, like all of everyone was. I mean, like 8 of us came out after school.
I have to say that really brings up the point of. It's become a hokey phrase of representation matters, because think about, I've brought this up too many times, so when all people and a lot of kids in Gen Z are coming out as queer, I'm sure a huge reason is because they're seeing other people do it and it's much more common and okay.
We also had gay teachers that didn't come out.
I mean, yeah, that's true. And also, like, you know, we had Mr. D times 3, Joe Dombrowski, on the podcast, and he told me that when he was first teaching, he made it a huge, huge secret that he was gay because he could have been fired, he could have been, you know, people calling him a groomer, pedophile, whatever the fuck it is. But I think that even in, you know, your experience in a musical theater program and that fucking poor guy's story of all that young student do was get shown around by an upperclassman that was hotshot at college. He sucked his dick, because why wouldn't he? And then he got blamed for it when he got there.
Mm-hmm. And you know what else? I don't want allegedly, but potentially, because I don't even really still know the tea. Uh-huh. We had like an instructor who had passed away the first year of AIDS.
Oh my
had
God.
He wanted to leave because he was sick.
Oh my God.
Nobody knew what happened and everything else. And then that was like a big, like cloaked over this mystery. And don't you say that about him. And, you know, maybe it happened and you don't know him and like, all this kind of shit, you know?
So another layer of fear.
Another layer of like just weirdness and fear. Yeah. You know, and then I was in a very small town. The school was in a very small town. Mm-hmm. We had like a Walmart. We had no coffee shops, no nothing to do. You know, McDonald's like really far away. Like, very like not, you know, they had a Blockbuster that I worked at, but it was very like Southern, you know, Florida, kind of not South Florida, but like Southern people, Florida. It's different.
Sure.
South Florida is more metropolitan.
Yeah.
But Central and North Florida kind of get like Georgia, you know.
You're saying culturally Alabama. Southern.
Alabama. Yeah. Moment. Yeah. Yeah.
So then does that mean that when you were in college, were you able to have any experimentation, expression of your sexuality, or were you?
Yeah, I did. There is like, there also was this vibe of like, cause this, it was like the late 90s, early 2000s. And there was like this switch that was happening there of like raver culture, uh-huh. where like if you went to a rave and made out with a guy, you weren't necessarily gay.
Oh, and so that was like, the Molly.
I was really the ecstasy back then. I was really drawn to rave culture, probably primarily for that reason.
Of course.
I mean, I did like the music, but the guys were so hot and like so sexually free and didn't care what, you know, everyone was wearing like nail polish and, you know, candy necklaces. And like, it didn't really matter as much, you know?
You're like, can I have a sucky of that letter R on your candy necklace?
Yeah. Can you please rub that Nickelodeon vibrating pen on my head while I sniff Vix? Like, it was like, whatever. I mean, it was just interesting, you know, that was happening. Plus, my school was so sexually charged, as all theater schools are. Like, you know, and even the straight guys were like a little heteroflexible. And like, we were doing things like, okay, everyone, we're doing massage circles, and you're like massaging everyone, and then you turn around, you massage everyone
of
else.
Course.
And in dance class, doing the Alexander technique where we're all in sweatpants and we're all just bending everyone's legs and moving everyone's hands and toes.
I'm triggered.
I was getting hard all the time, and like crazy shit was happening, and it was like sexually charged, you know. And then we went through this phase that was instigated by a friend of one of the popular kids in my school, who came in and was like, you could kiss and not be gay. And then all the guys started kissing. Like, there was always like some reason for them to kiss. It was like they were doing like spin the bottle, and they'd be like, I don't care, I'm not, you know, prejudiced. And then they were like,
do you know, and what, so I love that counter
out a lot.
I love that the straight guys are proving how woke they are by making out all the other gays. Cut to, I'm sure the vast majority of those straight men came out a decade later.
Yeah, a lot of them didn't, but like the one who's instigating it still didn't. He got married with kids.
Stop it. Wow, what a story.
He cornered me at a party one time, and he was like, you're not going to believe me, but a lot of people think that I'm gay just because I kiss dudes. And I was like, what? What, huh? And so he was like, yeah. He's like, I'm just upset because people don't understand that, like, you know, he's like macking some game on me. And then I was like, I believe you. And he's like, well, prove it. And then he made out with me.
Stop it.
You're and like my feet like lifted off the ground. You know what I mean? I was like, oh.
He must have been a good kisser. He got around.
He was super hot. Yeah.
I do think that straight men in theater, their major is theater and their minor is attention. So there is a fine line between the straight men who are actually straight and, or, you know, or bi or whatever, that enjoy kissing all genders. And then there's the closet cases that just, you know, needed a beat. So does that mean that when you were in college, obviously in a very sexually tense but also different land, this, what year did you grad, what, how many years before that, and then you
left college in the middle of it to go do theater. I took the summer off and I went to Actors Studio Louisville, and then I went to New York, and in New York I started auditioning, and I got two musicals in a season in the same town as my mom's in South Florida. So I was like, from New York, so I was like, if I mess up, I'll land on her couch. Like, it's totally fine. You know, and I did Damn Yankees in 1776.
What theater was it?
Broward Stage Door Theater. Just closed.
Of course. Of course.
You know it?
Yeah. So my husband and I met at an audition for musical theater while we were in New York City. So
oh, like,
Broward
cool. Okay.
Was 100%. Yeah. So first of all, Mazel Tov. You've been a star since the jump.
I actually booked all my first auditions, my first commercial, my first movie, my first play, the first.
All right, I take it back. I'm not happy for you anymore. I'm just pissed. I'm pissed.
But maybe not the second or the third. So I did theater there, and the cast of Damn Yankees was super gay. Like, you know, they were like dancers, you know? So.
And then there's that bitch that plays Rosie or whatever. And
Lola.
She's probably,
yeah, right.
Lola. Thank you, Lola. She's the biggest fag hag of the bunch. She's going out for happy hours. Cut to all the guys are sucking each other off. Classic.
Kind of. She was a little bit like I think she was in her 40s at the time. And she was like a little over it, you know?
Oh, shit. She was like, ugh, my 58th show at Broward.
But I was 20 at this point, and I wasn't even old enough to drink. And so they'd all go out to the bars and I wouldn't go or anything. So I didn't like experience anything yet, really, too much, you know. Mm-hmm. I still didn't feel like I fit in. I didn't see me. You know, I didn't know about the bear community. All I knew were like dancer twinks, evil dancer twinks. And I just was like, what is this? This is gay. This isn't me. You know, like I didn't understand.
Of course. So then, of course, you're going to be confused. I think that that is a reason why I didn't come out, because I feel almost bad saying this, but it is my truth. There were only two out guys in my high school. And they were struggling in their own way to express themselves. You know, this was in St. Louis. It was 2000, whatever it was. And one of them was really funny, but he, let me say that again. He was funny and he was incredibly demonstrative of his queerness in a way that made me feel nervous about how I was perceived, because I basically deep down wanted to be like that. He was fabulous. He dyed his hair. He wore the hottest looks from Hollister. And then the other out gay guy was the type that would make everyone else uncomfortable, not because he was being himself, because he was like groping and touching, and it was his own way of dealing with his queerness. And so the things that I was looking at, it wasn't something that I saw myself in, just like you seeing these demon twinks. It's hard to feel safe or even excited to embrace who you are when you don't see a place that is authentically representative of you.
If we're talking about my sexuality, this is where it really gets tricky, because at this point, I didn't identify. I mean, it was only a few years ago that I was like, oh, that's what happened. Mm. I was definitely biromantic, but homosexual.
Interesting. Biromantic, homosexual.
So I was like this. It took me so long to figure that out because I was really falling in love with women.
Mm.
And I was like, I want you to be my wife kind of vibes because I was so starving for like reciprocation of intimacy and love. Sex was findable both with men and women, but I couldn't find the intimacy or love. And so I was falling in love with women who didn't want like either a virgin girl or like this one girl who I fell in love with had lost her virginity the year before. And then the guy cheated on her and broke her heart. So she was like doing like a retrospective. So I fell in love with her because I knew she wouldn't want to have sex with me.
Wow.
You know, kind of thing. And then finally, when I was out of school, while I was doing Damn Yankees or 1776, I don't remember which one, I was also working as a singing waiter. I'm so gay. but actually, again, the only gay person at the singing waiter place. Jesus, like not even a lesbian to say like wake the freak up, you know.
Not even a lesbian wearing kitchen shoes who could help send you to the closest piano bar, which didn't exist. God, I'm so sorry.
So I did that, and like I worked at the singing waiter restaurant, and I met a girl there, and we started dating. And I remember after like our third date, her best friend also worked with us, and she was like, "I can't believe we haven't fucked yet." She was like, "I'm being so good this time." And I was like, "Oh my God." I was like, I saw the hourglass go from like tick, tick, tick to just all the sand ball. And I got like so scared. I was like, I've got to do something. So I went to my grandmother, who is like a really good friend of mine and like a confidant and like my prayer warrior and a mentor. In a lot of ways, more of a mom than my mom kind of was, because my mom was really young when she had me. Mm-hmm. She was more of like a matriarch, I should say. My mom was a great mom, but she was like more of the leader of the family. Mm-hmm. And so I went to her and I was like, my plan was to try to see if I could say I had erectile dysfunction so my grandfather could get Viagra and then they could give it to me and then I could use it to have sex with my girlfriend. That was like my plan.
Wow.
But it backfired. It wasn't, oh. I mean, it was probably the best plan I could have to be straight. But when I told my Nana that what was going on, she brought me a Bible with a bookmark in it that said Danny Gay. And I lost my shit. I was like, even you think I'm gay? And I had a literal come to Jesus moment. I like went into her bathroom and literally at my Nana's house was like the holiest place I could think of, even more than a church. My Nana's like a prayer warrior, like prays every morning for like an hour and journals. And like I got on my knees and I said, God, I'm looking at you right now. I'm opening the heavens and I'm staring at you right in the eye. And if you have a woman that can give me everything that I need and I can give her everything I need. Right now at 21, I'll get married. Like some of my friends are already getting married. I was like, but if you don't, then I'm going to know that you made me this way and I'll spend the rest of my life trying to figure out why. Mm. And it was just like, at that point, my grandma was like, do you want me to talk to the pastor? I was like, yes, somebody, anybody. And so she spoke to the pastor and the pastor was like, I'm not really an expert on this, but someone actually just came and spoke to me about this. Maybe it's like fate. Here's this card. I don't really know who he is. Check it out. And it was conversion therapy.
Of course it was.
And so I put myself into conversion therapy.
Oh my God.
And so that went on for like 6 months. And the guy was really gay. I didn't understand what conversion therapy was. We didn't have a word for it back then. And he was really gay, acting like, just hello. Like, how are you? Like, really like that. Like, over the top.
This is how you don't kiss a man.
That's how he sounded. Exactly. Right? And so I was like, perfect. I was like, here's a nice gay guy that's going to diagnose me. Like, he'll know. I couldn't like get a gay down to be like, am I gay, that I could trust? Here's a gay Christian. I was like, I could trust him, you know? And it got to the point where he was like, so I was telling my wife. And I'm like, your wife? And he was like, yeah, I'm married. I used to be gay. I'm like, used to be gay. You can't used to be gay.
No.
I was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, aren't you afraid? You know, he's like, what are you afraid of? And I'm like, I'm afraid I'm going to go to hell. And I literally broke him. Like, he was like, you're not going to go to hell. And I'm like, what do you mean? And he said this to me. He goes, you could be sucking a dick. And the second coming of Christ could happen. And you'll still go to heaven. It's not the sin. If you love God, like everybody has sin. And I was like, really? I was like, I got to go. And I went home and I went online and I lost my virginity.
To a man.
Yes. I already lost my virginity to a woman years ago, but yeah.
So it really was conversion therapy. It converted you into
a
dude fucker. That conversion therapist reminds me of Waiting for Guffman, where
I hate you and I hate your ass face. He's very like that.
The line that I'm thinking of was where he's like, you know, I was shopping for my wife Bonnie's clothing. I buy all of her clothes, and I found a gorgeous pantsuit. It's very that. It's very like I was shopping for my wife Bonnie. Well, I'm grateful that he gave you the internal allowance to sleep with a man, because I think that set history on its course.
The bad part is he did tell me that you have bisexual tendencies and it's your mother's fault and you need to tell her, and I did.
Did you tell her it was her fault?
I did.
What did she say?
She goes, really? And she got quiet and she cried a little, and then we didn't talk for like a couple of months. It was really sad.
Wow.
Like, it was probably the only time in my life I never spoke to my mom.
And then obviously you were able to reconnect, and
I found a little room that was for rent in a gay couple's house in Milton Manors. It was $400 a month. It was the tiniest thing. It was probably like one third of their garage, let's put it that way. But it was clean and nice, and I moved in, and they were nice to me. They thought that I was like a Martian because I didn't know anything. They're like, do you know what K is? I'm like, no. They're like, you know, they're like, have you ever worn heels? I'm like, no. And they're like, they thought, like, literally, they were like, totally prototype, you know, Chelsea or like Hell's Kitchen gays, or like,
yeah,
West Hollywood gays, or like Wilton Manors gays, like the total prototype two gays. I remember they invited me one time into a house party, and everyone liked me because I was funny. And then they were like, well, we're gonna have a party, you should come. And they were like, bring Danny. And they brought me to their other friend's party, and we were doing a house tour, and they were showing off like their doucher in the shower. Like, they're like, look, we put this in. And I think it was like the first time that douches were really starting to come out, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, this was like 1999 or something. And they're like, look at this. And everyone's like, oh, you put it right in the shower. Like, and I remember being like, am I on another planet? Like,
did you even know what it was for?
I mean, kind of, you know.
Had you bottomed at that point?
Yeah, I actually, wow, I don't really think I ever talked about this, but when I first started having sex, I was like a total bottom for like the first like 3 years of having sex. Because if I tried to have sex with a guy, I think I would just be like, I like come, and it was like over. Like, I was so nervous. I was so nervous. Like, I was just like, it would just like the tip of my dick would like touch a butthole and it would be over. Like,
can you,
I was like, ah, I was like, I can't do it.
You're and a Foley like, artist, the way you did that sound effect.
And I would lie. I'd be like, I'm thinking of my girlfriend. I have to stop. Like, I always used to present as a straight guy trying it for the first time.
Listen, we all have to do a marketing plan, and you just...
Yeah, that was like my AOL fantasy, like where I was like, oh...
Sorry, dude, I came thinking about my girlfriend.
It was bad, dude. It's all bad, you know? Listen,
it was all... When we look back on those times, it's all bad, and I think that's
part of... And now I watch and I look at like these 14-year-olds skipping around, gender expressing themselves. I'm like, I'm so happy. Like, I could cry over them, like... And at the same time, I'm like a little jealous. Like,
of course you are.
Like, it would have been amazing to just have been free, like, for the majority of my life, you know?
I struggle to even consider what my life would have been like if I had been born around now or a few years back. And like, and the thing is, it's probably a horrible question to ask because there's a reason why we were born at the time that we were born. But you're right. It's, I mean, just like you booking your first fucking movie, it's like, I'm jealous, but I could cry because we have it. I do. Speaking of, though, cultural touchstones, I need to ask you another famous podcast question, which is, Danny Francesi, if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
Just one?
Uno.
The world was ending, and I could only save one character actress. I guess, I'm stalling, I would have to say... The only person that comes to mind right now is Jennifer Coolidge, but I don't know if that's the right answer.
I think it's a gorgeous answer, especially because she is having her White Lotus moment. I am seeing some people on Twitter complain that how much her character is being seen, which I feel is a homophobic response in this season. But
I would also say Catherine O'Hara.
Catherine O'Hara is a stunning answer. My dog's even screaming in the other room because he's hearing all of these references.
Kevin!
I think that Jennifer Coolidge and Catherine O'Hara, let's say they were the last
and two, Parker Posey,
they're the final three.
They were having brunch and I just grabbed them all real quick.
They're having brunch. The world is ending around them. Between Parker Posey, Catherine O'Hara, and Jennifer Coolidge, who dies first?
Jennifer Coolidge.
She's like, oh my God, it's a beautiful sunset. Jennifer, just, no, that's a,
yeah,
that's
she's
a
like,
fire.
My heel broke without me.
Oh, I forgot my purse. Hold on. And then she's gone. And then it's Parker Posey and Catherine O'Hara. And honestly, I think they both survive.
I feel like Catherine O'Hara survives, though.
All right.
She's the final girl.
KDO, Catherine O'Hara. Well, you know who's not going to survive is Candace Cameron Blur. I did see that you tweeted, I hope that Twitter goes down before Candace Cameron Blur does. And
no, I said I hope it doesn't go down before she does, because I want to watch her downfall.
You're right. I hope it doesn't go down.
Yeah. I'm like, please don't stop. I'm still harassing this woman. Like, not yet.
It's just so, it's so poetic to me that...
It's annoying to me because, like, I bi-romanticized her when I was younger. I thought she...
Of course, but listen...
I had a big crush on her.
Anyone in Full House, I think we bi-romanticized. I mean, Danny Tanner versus... honestly,
I think I just thought she was hot because she's so butch.
Oh, there you go. She did, you know, rock.
She's like, you know, kind of like a man with a wig on, like a little bit.
Sure. But you know what's so devastating is that, like, she could have been a gay icon because your good Judy Jonathan Bennett is doing all these Hallmark movies, and then all of a sudden she's leaving to now start a homophobic network, or like star in a homophobic network. Do you find that the future of that network is like hopefully going to crash and burn because of the hate, or are you worried that, or we don't even not even care about how well it does?
What's going to happen is this, like, that network, the GAC, which I like to call Gays Ain't Christmas now. The GAC network, right? And then Newsmax is another one.
Yep.
It's all just going to keep flourishing. I'm sorry to say. It's going to be its own thing. One of the things I love about this era that is so annoying to be living in, but I'm happy, is that all of the hateful people are showing it on the outside.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'd rather you be that way than have my kid be in your school and you be the teacher.
Because I didn't know what you're
teachers
dealing
like
with.
That. I didn't deal with, like, homophobic teachers. I didn't even know I was gay when the teacher would spot me being gay and treat me a certain type of way.
Yes. Whereas now they show that they are hateful, and then hopefully you
can
know
let me
avoid.
Know.
Yeah.
But I almost feel like they should have their own religion. Like, the way they're trying to use Christianity and abuse Christianity, we call them on our show Christians with a hard R, like Christian, like, you know, like
Christian. Those,
you know, the hard R Christians, like the ones with like blue eyed blonde hair Jesus from Texas, like those ones should have their own denomination that we could all just avoid. I want them to say, I'm sorry, it's against my religion to teach a gay student, take my baby out of your class, gay or straight, I want my nieces and nephews out of your fucking class. Like, I don't want it anymore. I want to know. I want to know right to your face. And I'm moving to Florida. I mean, not permanently. I'll still always keep my other place, but I'm going to buy property in Florida so I can vote in fucking Florida and be around my family. And trust me, I'm going to make it gayer. I'm going to open up a drag bar or something. I'm going to do
say
something.
Say gay, bitch.
To make it gayer.
Say gay. Oh, I love that. You're doing the,
like,
Lord's work.
You know, the first thing I did with my niece, who was so upset by the say gay thing, because can't say gay thing, because she's such a little ally. You know, I'm like Gunkle of the Year. She's 10.
Oh,
and, oh my God. I have 100 stories where she supported the queer community. Oh. I took her to a museum, the Perez Art Museum in Miami. And it was like, we were looking at the art and I was explaining art to her. And I was sitting down on the floor and saying, what do you think about this painting? And really giving her, like, even though I didn't really feel like, I felt like weird sitting on the floor looking at a painting. I was like doing it for her. So, cause I'm like, let's start it young. And like, they wish you can see what you do when you are mesmerized by something. And then the little placard that tells you, like, what, you know, the materials are and the artist. She's like, what's that? And I said, well, this explains that. And it explains, you know, who he is and what his ideas were. And then I was like, I should be supporting women for her. And I was like, or she. She goes, or they. That was when she was seven.
Seven, bitch.
And then my brothers, we're getting ready for my niece's, my other niece's birthday party. And it's like Marvel themed. So they're blowing up balloons and stuff. And there's pink, he blows up a pink balloon. And my sister-in-law blows up a blue balloon. And my brother goes, it's like a gender reveal. And she goes, you know, she gives him the side eye, dad joke, you know. And then he blew up a red one, you know, with like gold writing on it. It was probably Iron Man or something. And he goes, maybe this one's from China. It's Chinese. you know, and my niece was like, "Dad, you know,
Dad."
And then he blew up one that had a hand on it, like, and he goes, "Oh, this one's hand sexual." And she goes, "What do you mean hand sexual?" And he goes, "Like me, handsome sexual."
No, Dad.
And she goes, "Dad, now you're just making a mockery of the LGBTQ community."
This, okay, Bette Midler wishes she was as much of an ally.
Wait, can you even believe it? When my brother told me that story, I was screaming. Like,
I'm obsessed that she's like 4 years old. She's like, gender is a construct. It's like, okay.
I know. So like when this, you know, I bought her, she said to me, she goes, "Uncle Dan," she goes, "Gunkle, I need a purse that'll really wow them." And I'm like, "Well, you've come to the right place, little girl." And I was, so she has to wear a uniform, but at recess, they're allowed to carry like a crossbody bag. But she wanted something that was wild. So I got her this like little kawaii kind of like, it looked like strawberry milk and it had a straw coming out of it. And and everyone was like, "Oh my God, I love it." And the teachers were like, "Where did you get that?" And she was like, "My gunkle got it for me." And one of the kids was like, "What's a gunkle?" And she goes, "What, are you living under a rock?"
My fucking uncle. I do think that, a side note, I think that strawberry milk is gay. I think that
it is gay.
I had a obsessive moment where I would put strawberry sugar syrup into milk, swirl around, love the pink color, and just pink down milk. That baby. Ugh.
Pink milk down.
You're honestly inspiring me because my nephews are four and under, and my oldest one is like starting to really, we're really connecting, but I cannot wait to just
seven.
It's seven. I can't wait.
Seven. I wish she was seven forever. She's already 10 and she's already starting to get to a little cool. Like 10, seven is heaven.
Seven is heaven, babe. Speaking of heaven, you have a gorgeous video online of you singing "Don't Rain on My Parade" at an award ceremony that you hosted. You, first of all, I love the vocals of it all. Now that I know that you were a musical theater.
Now, I have to say that I only had 2 days rehearsal on that and I literally never sang or really ever listened to that song. And that's a very hard song.
Very.
And I was so upset with the director. I was like, "You're giving me two times to go over this." Like, and you know what else? At the end of it, everybody else that sang that day, like I think Lettucey sang and all these other people sang at that event, they had the teleprompter. And I'm like, I could have had the teleprompter for that.
The whole fucking time.
And freaking Stephen Schwartz was in the audience. I was so nervous.
Stop it. Well, that begs the question then. You, I'm sure, have seen that Lea Michele had her cast album come out for Funny Girl. Are you a supporter?
Well, I'm a Jonathan Groff person, you know, because he's my buddy from Looking, clearly. And they're besties. And part of me says, how bad could she be if they're friends? But Chris Colfer is very sweet. And you know, a lot of those other kids are very sweet. And then what their experience was,
they do not like.
You know, but there's no denying talent.
No, like, denying talent. I just, yeah, what Jonathan Groff is like to me, the gold standard of just like nice, hot, gay.
Like, oh, yeah. He's not even like naughty to have a crush on. Like, you're just like, yeah. Like,
yeah, I know. I like it kind of hurt how much I had a crush on him for a while. I just like, I know he's a good kisser. I know that he would love my family. I know that.
And he like dances so sexy and he party like in the way he like, he's just such a sexy, sweet man. I like love him.
And he also, I don't think he knows fully how hot he is, which is even hotter.
It's actually true. He doesn't. And he's still like a big nerd. Like he like rides his bike to set and like doesn't drink too much and wants to go home early to run lines.
Stick a fucking fork in me.
Meanwhile, like me and Russell Tovey were like, "It's at the Eagle Egg."
Not oh my God, Russell Tovey. Yeah, your memoir.
Oh, wait for it, girl.
I'll be first in line, babe.
But I'm gonna spill it all one day.
Oh, I can't wait. And honey,
you're gonna have to because I'm gonna have to be like in the old nursing home. They're all gonna come for me with pitchforks.
Ryan Murphy is like, dush, 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 he's 208.
Ryan Murphy, please. Didn't even know who I am.
But well, his laws, his fucking laws.
Ryan Murphy, I love him and I'm such a big fan, but he doesn't cast fat dudes. Never, in nothing, nowhere. You have the whole entire gay spectrum of everybody, LGBTQIA, but not one person the size, unless they're playing someone disgusting.
Or they'll put him in a fat suit.
Yeah, oh God. That's not Ryan Murphy, but yeah.
Is it not Ryan Murphy? Didn't Sarah Paulson, fuck.
She wore a fat suit to play Linda Tripp, but you're she also gained weight.
Oh.
And she couldn't do both roles at the same time. She was doing two, the woman is an icon. Like, and I mean, that was a different scenario. It wasn't, you weren't wearing like a giant fat suit to play Linda Tripp. You were wearing like a little bit of padding so you could meanwhile, you were doing two roles at once in two different shows.
So, and so just make sure I'm not a complete fucking idiot. That is a Ryan Murphy show. It was just a different, but a different stand.
Okay, yeah, it was It was the Monica Lewinsky thing.
Right. I was making sure I could keep my gay card. So no, I think that Ryan Murphy would be very smart to cast you. And listen, the guy.
Look, I'm not begging nobody for nothing over here.
And that is what the energy we need. So whenever the memoir does come out, I will obviously be promoting, sharing, and obviously asking you to do a live interview with me for a show. So let me then, since we have to sadly get close to the end of this fucking stunning conversation, can I ask you a question I did not prep you on, which is, Danny Franzese, what is the best Whoopi Goldberg film?
Soap Dish.
I knew you'd have a subversive, gorgeous answer, and you did. I had not seen Soap Dish until I did this podcast.
Although The Color Purple is a masterpiece.
A masterpiece. And we cannot wait to see.
But I only say that Soap Dish is better because I can't. The Color Purple is so heart-wrenching. I can't watch it every day.
Yeah.
Soap Dish every day.
Yeah. I think that's very well said and also understandable. God, I'm really sad that we have to end this episode. Danny, where can people follow you? Where can people keep up with your stunningness?
They can follow me at What's Up Danny on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, blackpeoplemeet.com, JDate, Farmers Only, Christian Mingle, Venmo.
Which, by the way, you did tweet really fast, if I may bring up, that you want to meet a guy older than 35 who loves Jesus, his mama, and bottoming, who has a flexible career, maybe a writer, that lets him travel, can also afford to take me on a vacation once a year, and I'll take us on two others. Bonus if you pack my suitcases and with a love note on it.
Hello, name it and claim it.
Sweetheart. So we have recently done a segment on this podcast that is gay matchmaking, and I will just say that you've just named what you want. If there's any listener out there that is either finding themselves in Florida, in Los Angeles, and they're close to Danny, and you would like to just sit
take
on
it
a
in Mexico. Take it to Mexico.
You'll go to Mexico, you will listen to
Here's the thing. A lot of those things are flexible, but like the truth is, like I can't be the one that does everything. Like you gotta do something for me, and I'll double it. Ooh. I'll always beat you, like at being the better boyfriend. I'm telling you, I'm like crazy. I'll always try to top whatever it is that you're doing.
In more ways than one. Listen, whoever dates you is lucky, because the amount of effort you're gonna put in and inches, honey. Effort and inches, baby. Danny, thank you so much for coming on this podcast. I hope that I get to see you in real life in this lifetime.
Yeah, please come see my play. If you're in Florida, come see Italian Mom Loves You at the Boca Black Box Theater, December 4th through the 11th.
December 4th through the 11th. Get your fucking tickets. We'll put the link in the description.
Just look for me at What's Up Danny everywhere good social media is sold, except for Be Real, where someone took my name, you bastard, and I'm What's Up Dan.
Get the fuck off of his name on Be Real, whoever you are, monster.
Monster.
We'll do this. We'll do some advocacy for you there, and we will see you next time. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, you gay ass person.
Thanks for listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast. That is it for season 2. And I hope you live your gay ass life loud and proud. Have an amazing rest of December. We're going to be back in January with a live show on January 19th and new amazing guests who are already signing on. I love you so much. Get your character actress sweatshirt. Follow at Gay Ass Podcast and just be kind to yourself. We'll see you soon.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.